Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. I am delighted to have you with me. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I would absolutely be happy to have you. As always, if you text Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777, you can get the live stream, the show notes, the podcast, the links around social media to follow me, YouTube, everything you need to know to be able to access the show. I continue to point this out because it actually is very important to me as we move forward that I do hope you'll consider texting the word ARMY to 33777. Then you'll get a link back. If you click the link, you can put in your first name, last name, zip code, and email address. As we expand, in fact, we're talking, those of you out at listening to KRMG in Tulsa, we're going to head out there in a couple of months. I want to be able to let you know when we're coming, where we're going to be, so that you guys can get together with us. Really want to be able to make that happen with you guys. Just delighted to have you with me as we move around the country and start doing more live events around, after, before, wherever we can with the election and then into next year. So text ARMY to 33777. As I begin the show, having technical problems on my end here, but I gotta start the program talking about Bill Clinton's speech last night. Now, listen. I will acknowledge, as all of us will acknowledge, that having Bill Clinton on stage at the Democratic National Convention was a little bit weird and for a lot of people a little bit off-putting. I mean, you can't really separate Bill Clinton from Bill Clinton. You can't separate Bill Clinton from Monica Lewinsky. You can't separate him from Paula Jones. You can't separate him from Juanita Broderick. You can't separate him from all of those issues from his time in and out of office. You cannot separate him from Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, for all of the jokes from the Democrats about Donald Trump flying on Jeffrey Epstein's former jet as his 757 was broken, Bill Clinton flew on Jeffrey Epstein's jet with Jeffrey Epstein a whole lot of times. Dude's kind of creepy perv. He was also, as president of the United States, a very popular president of the United States who, on the stump, even to this day, people will tell you that they may hate his guts, but when you're with him, he lights up your world. It's one of those things you cannot appreciate unless you've experienced. Now, I've never experienced it. I know someone who despises Bill Clinton. And in fact, gave a lot of money to Bob Dole in 1996, supported Kenneth Starr, actually helped fund some nonprofits related to Ken Starr, helped fund some ad campaigns against Bill Clinton, doesn't like Hillary Clinton. I know this person. She tells me the story. How she was invited, being a very wealthy person and generous donor, she was invited to an event. Bill Clinton was going to be at the event. The person who organized the event for his nonprofit did not know how much she despised Bill Clinton. And unbeknownst to her, she knew Clinton was going to be at the event. She was honored to come. What she did not know was that the person organizing the event was going to arrange for her to meet Bill Clinton. She had no idea. She did not like Bill Clinton, had fundraised against Bill Clinton, despised Bill Clinton, met Bill Clinton. Said as much as she hated the man. And he knew who she was and the amount of money he had spent, or she had spent on him, against him. And he was charming and gracious and joking and humble and just schmoozed her. She said she left like Bill Clinton orbited around her, like it was all of his attention in the world was on her. And she said in that moment, despite all of her hatred, despite all of her disgust, she knew this man was an incredible politician. And you got that on stage last night. These Democrats who canceled Bill Clinton, who canceled him, who wanted nothing to do with him because of the Me Too movement. He had them eating out of the palm of his hands last night.
Now let's cut to the chase. I am too old to gild the lily. 2 days ago, I turned 78, the oldest man in my family for four generations. And the only personal vanity I want to assert is I'm still younger than Donald Trump.
You may not like him. He's got good one-liners, except he also said this.
And then he did something that's really hard for a politician to do. He voluntarily gave up political power. And George Washington knew that, and he did it. And he set the standard for us serving two terms before it was mandatory. It helped his legacy, and it will enhance Joe Biden's legacy.
Let's also be honest that the 22nd. I did know that. If the 22nd Amendment did not exist, William Jefferson Blythe Clinton would still be running for president of the United States, despite all his of all George Washington and Joe Biden voluntarily. Joe Biden did not. This is Chris Wallace. Come on, Chris.
You know, well, the word that everybody is using to describe tonight is bittersweet. It's just bitter. The fact of the matter, I'm not saying Joe Biden is bitter, but, you know, it's like you've been thrown out a window, and as you're falling, you go, gee, it's nice out here. No, he got thrown out of a window, and basically he was forced. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk tonight about how generous it was of him and selfless of him. He was basically forced out by Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. And I suspect even the fact that there has been this surge of enthusiasm since he left and Kamala Harris took his place, that's got to be pretty tough, too. You got thrown out of a window and everybody's applauding the person who's now in the room.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely right. It was essentially a coup. That's what's going on here. It's essentially a coup. And Bill Clinton saying he was voluntarily thrown out? No, that's not true. But I want to focus on something else Bill Clinton said. And my apologies. I watched it live, and it passed over so many people. I couldn't find the clip of it. But it was the most notable part, I thought, of Bill Clinton's speech. Because one of the things Clinton said was, listen, I'm not going to try a bad Bill Clinton impression. And my gosh, he sounded old. I mean, he is. He's 78, but wow. But one of the things Clinton said was, these are your neighbors who support Trump. They used to be our people. And he knows this because when he was president in 1994, the Republican Revolution happened. Newt Gingrich and Republicans swept back into Congress for the first time in over 40 years. States in the South began flipping to the GOP. It was comfortable having elected Bill Clinton in 1992. Many of these states, like Georgia, began rapidly shifting to the GOP. Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, they began this massive shift. And they reacted to Bill Clinton's character and his foibles and failings. And they were put off by his healthcare grab, Hillary Care at the time they called it. He put Hillary Clinton in charge of a massive government expansion of healthcare, and it radicalized people against him in the Midwest and the South. He had portrayed himself as a reasonable, moderate, centrist Democrat, not one of those wackadoo socialists, and then proposed a socialist health care system. A lot of those Democrats became Republicans overnight. And the shift kept going on into the 2000s. Happening now with working class voters, many of whom were Democrats. It's a competing message between Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the man who said, take a gun to a knife fight, get in your neighbor's face and argue with them. Barack Obama is the man who stood on stage and lamented the deep divisions that Donald Trump has brought to America and then spent 30 minutes attacking the right in visceral terms for what they believe in. Barack Obama is a demagogue who is divisive. Barack Obama is the guy who believed his strategy for winning in 2008 was to micro-target people and get those people to not so much love him as hate their neighbor. Remember, Barack Obama's campaign was the first campaign that sent mail pieces to people saying, hey, your neighbor is a Republican and voted. You haven't voted. Are you going to vote? Barack Obama, yes. I'm not making that up. Barack Obama and his campaign for 2012 against Mitt Romney pioneered harassing people by sending them mail pieces saying your neighbor's a Republican voter. You're going to go vote. That's what Barack Obama did. Barack Obama and the media has priapism when it comes to Barack Obama. He can do no wrong. He's some sort of saint. He's a religious icon. Remember all the media shots of him with the presidential seal behind him, making him look like he was a saint. The media loves the guy. The guy specialized in divisive, cutthroat politics, division, not unity. And Bill Clinton last night stood on stage and said, hey, don't be afraid to disagree with your neighbor, but remember they're your neighbor. This is how far gone the Democrats are from Bill Clinton. That Bill Clinton could stand on that stage last night and get a muted reception for saying, don't hate your neighbor who supports the other side. They were once our people, don't hate them. And the Democrats, it fell on deaf ears compared to Barack Obama's division, get in their face, fight, argue, take a gun to a knife fight, telling Hispanic voters Republicans are your enemies. Bill Clinton stood on stage and said, these people aren't your enemies. They used to be with us. We got to get them back. The difference is this. Bill Clinton had to learn at a time in American politics where the parties were drifting apart, and he had to build coalitions with the left and the right. Bill Clinton famously built a coalition with the right to balance the American budget and pass welfare reform. Barack Obama's path forward was to harness the power of the left to get things done when he had control, and when he didn't have control, to use executive orders that were all undone by Donald Trump. As much as the media and the left will hagiify Barack Obama, Saint Barack, Barack Obama was a less effective president than Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton built bipartisan coalitions to get things done. And you saw that division on stage two nights ago, Barack Obama claiming that the right is the demagogue and visceral, while he himself being a demagogue and visceral, and Bill Clinton being a loyal partisan Democrat on stage last night, playing up the Democratic Party as if it's his favorite sports team. And then telling Democrats, don't hate the other side. The fact of the matter is, so much of the media and the left and the people on that stage pour their hopes and dreams into crushing the other side and hating the other side. This is no longer the party of Bill Clinton. It is the party of Barack Obama. It's an interesting, unique division. And we'll hear Kamala Harris tonight and see which side she's on. And I assure you that her side is not going to be with the let's persuade them we're good. It's going to be to persuade them that their own side is bad and they should reject it. The entire Democratic strategy for this convention has been to trot out Republicans to tell Democrats what they want to hear about the Republican Party. And only Bill Clinton was the one willing to stand up and say, these aren't bad people. We just disagree with them. And the result? Not even a viral clip on the internet because everyone wanted to move on from it.
Want to be on the show?
Hello?
I love your show.
Call Eric now at 877-973-7425. Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
That's right. You can call in, and if you want to call me, you got to get me today because I am actually going to be on the road tomorrow headed to Jacksonville. I'll be doing the show, but I'm not going to be able to take your phone calls tomorrow because of the setup. I'll be jumping back and forth, helping them with a fundraiser for the Children's Hospital down in Jacksonville as well. So you want to get me, you got to get me today. I am, by the way, just because I've gotten several requests, including my buddy Bill, who emailed yesterday, a longtime listener, I am going to tomorrow, obviously I'll cover Kamala Harris's speech from tonight, but I also then want to do a little bit of a deep dive in the state of play in this race, particularly the House and the Senate races. So I've gotten a lot of requests on that. I'll do that tomorrow. Now, for those of you on hold, stand by. I will get to your calls when we come back after this. I gotta say here, one of the interesting juxtapositions last night is Tim Walz seems really obsessed with J.D. Vance going to Yale. It's interesting to me that so many of the people who have spoken on stage at the Democratic National Convention went to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and other Ivy League colleges, and Tim Walz seems very upset that J.D. Vance got his law degree from Yale. Now, he went to Ohio State on the GI Bill after getting out of the Marines, J.D. Vance did, but Walz turns this into a line.
But I'll tell you what, growing up in a small town like that, you learn how to take care of each other. That family down the road, they may not think like you do. They may not pray like you do. They may not love like you do. But they're your neighbors. And you look out for them. And they look out for you.
It's this weird thing. And he goes on to say that his neighbors didn't go to Yale. He didn't go to Yale. You know, Bill Clinton preceded him on stage. Bill Clinton also was raised in poverty in Arkansas and was able to get to Yale. So I don't understand what this line of attack is, but he seems to think it's effective. Now, I got to tell you, I would rather send my kids to Hillsdale College than Yale, and you probably would as well. Great education. Y'all, they give away so many of their resources for free because it's their chartered mission back in the 1800s was to provide education as freely available as possible around the country. They take no taxpayer funds, state or federal, to do this, and they produce so much quality educational material for you, for others, for their campuses, for students around the country, K-12, and they do it for free. You can find out more at ericforhillsdale.com. You can join their podcast network with your podcast app and get so many of their great conversations for free. You can take their college courses on the Constitution. I did. I went to law school and learned stuff from that course. I get Imprimis for free. You can too. All you do is go to ericforhillsdale.com. ericforhillsdale.com. Go check out Hillsdale College. Learn more about them at ericforhillsdale.com today.
Smart, fearless, and occasionally funny. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Hello and welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across the nation. Glad to have you with me. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Tonight is the last night of the DNC, and yes, by the way, it's the D, the letter N, and C. I realize that there's been so much talk about abortion there that people might confuse it for a DNC, but no, it's a Democratic National Convention. It's just the Abortion Palooza 2024. It has been wild, including having Oprah Winfrey on stage lamenting all of the sexism and racism and everything else that she's
experienced.
From
the Redwood Forest, love those Redwoods, to the Gulf Stream waters, I've seen racism and sexism and income inequality and division. I've not only seen it, at times I've been on the receiving end of it.
Now, I want to say something here. I want to give you a different spin on this, and let me play this for you one more time. I want you to hear what Oprah Winfrey is saying.
from the redwood forests, love those redwoods, to the Gulf Stream waters. I've seen racism and sexism and income inequality and division. I've not only seen it, at times I've been on the receiving end of it.
There are a whole lot of Republicans out there saying, lady, shut your mouth, you're a billionaire. You got houses all over the world. How can you say that? Here's the problem. This is what the Republicans are doing to Oprah Winfrey is what the Democrats do to successful people. They ignore where they came from. And if you know anything about Oprah Winfrey's story, you know that she did not come from wealth. She is a self-made woman. And she did experience racism in her career. And she did experience sexism and sexual harassment. She did experience double standards in the workforce. She had to fight for what she got. Democrats oftentimes attack successful people like J.D. Vance and say, well, he went to Yale. What does he know? They forget this is a guy who was raised in Appalachian poverty, pulled himself up by the bootstraps, made a success of himself in the private sector, and has become a U.S. senator. Oprah Winfrey pulled herself up by her bootstraps, lived in poverty, in a not good situation with her family, made the most of it, and became an American success story. There's a divergence, though, between a guy like Vance and Winfrey, although to agree they share something in common, which I find interesting, and that is somehow this belief that without government, you're not going to get where they got. I mean, Vance, very explicitly in his economic policies, wants some activist level of government, an industrial policy. Oprah Winfrey wants some activist role of government in your life. And both of them seem to forget the fact that, yes, government has a role in helping people, but too much government allows people to become addicted to government. And for Oprah Winfrey to stand on that stage last night and not be willing really to fully acknowledge how much she benefited from Reaganomics as her career went on, got on fire in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan's time in office and then George H.W. Bush. I mean, Oprah Winfrey did not begin her career when Barack Obama was president. She was winding down her career about then. Her success came after Ronald Reagan's economic vision in the 1980s. And somehow she seems to think that we need more of Kamala Harris's regulations and we need a bigger, more robust government, as opposed to acknowledging I am an American success story. Why do we need more government to get us where we are? Why do we need more government? Why do we need Kamala Harris's activist vision of government? And again, you know my preference in this election, well, I assume you do, but it is one of the issues where I disagree with J.D. Vance on, is I think we actually need less government in our lives. And both of these people, Vance and Oprah, are success stories. And it's kind of wild to me she wanted to take a dig, like so many of the others at this convention, at J.D. Vance, who is an American success story. Like Oprah Winfrey, was raised in not good circumstances in Appalachia, made a success of himself, got into the Marines, served his country, unlike Oprah Winfrey, went to college on the GI Bill, an actual successful government program, went to law school, didn't practice law, became a venture capitalist, and has become a success. And I just don't understand the people like Winfrey and others who can't look at this situation and say this is it, particularly after all of the thousands and thousands of people she's interviewed over time. And say, you know what, an America that can allow people to get off the government dime and thrive and become like me, that's the America I want. Instead, so many of the billionaires who have stood on stage at the Democratic National Convention to lecture us on needing Kamala Harris are a bunch of billionaires who are convinced not only can you not do what they did, but that you should not do what they did. There's a level of repentance of sin that their wealth has made them somehow an identified sinner. Got to tell you, the good book has a lot to say about that class of people, and all of it boils down to this. that your wealth at this point is an act of mercy, because this is the best you're going to have it for eternity. So you might as well enjoy it, unless you're going to repent. And then you'll pay a price. You'll have a cross to bear, but then you'll have greater days afterwards in eternity. And so many of the people who have stood on stage at the Democratic National Convention to lecture the rest of us about wealth and income inequality and racism and sexism in America are the upper income people in this country who have benefited from that system and despise the fact that you might be able to benefit from that system as well. The lecturing tone just never ceases to amaze me, and it bothers me every time. The idea that you, listening to me right now, if the government got out of the way, that you would somehow fall, and that you should not be entitled to the access and benefits that they had, that the system should remain complex enough that you can't afford to succeed. That complexity is a subsidy to the very people lecturing you on the badness of America. They were able to get around it. They don't want you to, including Oprah Winfrey. Now, I want to go to Lewis's phone call. Lewis, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Eric, I want to point out there was a lady on stage, her squill was so high, but she was talking about she wants young people to be able to have a better future and better tennis shoes, serving you burgers at the McDonald's or whatever. It's like they want to have the success at the French fryer, and there's no voice saying, hey, we want to help you show you how to achieve to become a doctor or a higher education. I don't even Randy Weingarten. You couldn't even see her above the podium, but there's no cheering on of higher education, of cheering better success. It's like the dumbing down of society. And when you have Kamala Harris say we're going to give $25,000 for a down payment, that's not an achievement. We already have that. It's called the projects. And these people don't try to achieve any better, because that's where they stay, and that's as far as they look to be able to grow in their life. Barack Obama lives in Martha's Vineyard. The reason he lives in Martha's Vineyard is because of Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy introduced him way before he became president.
Look, I think that's well said. And again, this Lewis, this all goes back to my what I wish the Republicans would seize on about this, which is the Democrats do not want you to succeed in America, because if you succeed and need less government, you're rejecting them. And I think that ultimately becomes the theme. Whether you listen to Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or Oprah Winfrey or Tim Walz or Kamala Harris tonight, the prevailing thesis of the Democrats is that you need the government. Without the government, you won't be successful. Private sector, bad. Public sector, good. What you have to understand about them is that, with the exception of Oprah, all of these people lecturing you on this, their career has been in the public sector. They have lived off the government dole. So if you reject the government, you are rejecting them. And that is the defining moment in this election, and it's one the Republicans, I don't think, have yet to seize on that they really should seize on, that the Democratic narrative in this election is that you need the government. The Republican narrative is the government needs you. The Democratic narrative is if you become successful, you are no longer dependent on the government, and therefore you have rejected the very thing that made you successful. The Republican message is or should be that by virtue of your success, you need the government less, which frees up those resources for the next people to come along. These are defining themes in this election. And it is at the heart of Barack Obama's speech the other night that Republicans say the government's inherently corrupt. The reason that idea offends Barack Obama is because he's never lived outside of the government dole in his public career. Neither is Kamala Harris or Tim Walz or Joe Biden. They've been on the taxpayer dole the entire time, governmental welfare queens essentially, running the place as opposed to being dependent on the place. They've been setting the policy. So for the Republicans to tell you government is bad is to be a direct insult at them, because they believe themselves to be the government, just as members of the press sometimes think the freedom of the press and the First Amendment belongs to them and no one else. Any rejection of government is taken as an impersonal front by these Democrats because they believe themselves to be the government. And I think that's a central and defining moment of this campaign. It is remarkable to me that the Republicans have not really been able to land on this. They are trying to do some counter programming. For example, you've got Donald Trump went out to North Carolina yesterday, interestingly enough, stops his rally, comes out from behind the bulletproof glass to be able to check on someone who's passed out in the crowd. He has this line.
But the voters will hold Kamala and Joe accountable for this November when I take office, and they're going to be held accountable for what they've done to this country. Right? Thank you. I will ask for the resignations of every single senior military official who touched the Afghanistan disaster. I want their resignations immediately. And I want them on the desk in the Oval Office, the Resolute desk. I want them on at 12 o'clock, Inauguration Day, everybody involved with that disaster. When you have a disaster so stupid as that, that caused us such problems, you don't know what that's done to the reputation of our country, the Afghanistan disaster.
That's Donald Trump in North Carolina, and then J.D. Vance was on with Jake Tapper last night.
Well, when Donald Trump was president, Jake, you had people buying homes at record rates. You had young Americans who were able to afford to raise a family. You had people could afford the basic trappings of middle class life in this country. And so when Tim Walz says that Donald Trump's agenda doesn't work for middle class Americans, he already was president for 4 years, and his agenda worked very well for middle-class Americans. Again, I just wish, I would love for Tim Walz or Kamala Harris or anybody else to say that during the 3.5 years that Kamala Harris was vice president, here is the thing that she did to make groceries more affordable. Here is the thing that she did to make it possible to raise a family in this country. Or here's the thing that she did to secure rather than open up the border. Because they can't talk about Kamala Harris's record, they're creating a phantom of Donald Trump's leadership. The Donald Trump that I know and that the American people know, I think, produced really good results for the American people. It's a record to be proud of and a record I'd like to get back to, frankly, because it was good for the American people.
Yeah, and to his point, Kamala Harris was on stage at a rally 2 days ago and said this.
We believe in a future where we lower the cost of living for America's families. And when I am president, I will bring down the cost of groceries by making sure markets are competitive and fair.
She's already vice president of the United States in the Biden-Harris administration. Why can't she do this right now? That's got to be the Republicans time and time again. It's got to be that she's already there. How is this not already happening? It's political malpractice if the Republicans do not keep reminding people her day one was 3.5 years ago, as Donald Trump mentioned last week. They've got to keep reminding people of that. Now, I want to remind you of Americans for Prosperity. If you go to AmericansForProsperity.org, you can sign up with them today. They're the leading and largest grassroots organization around the country. They're a do tank, not a think tank. They go into the states and they do the business of the conservative movement. They teach people about free markets. They teach people about the needs to support school choice and families. They teach people how to make persuasive cases to their neighbors through their local government and to their state government, and they advance freedom. They advance families. They have a comprehensive plan on securing the border and pointing out all the things that could be done right now by executive action to secure the border so that you have all that knowledge and information. They've got chapters around the country. They'd love to have you a part of Americans for Prosperity. All you have to do is go to AmericansForProsperity.org. You'll start getting key insights and information about American public policy, how to improve the country, the things you can do right now to fix the country. AmericansForProsperity.org. They'll also make you an incredible grassroots activist. Go check them out, Americans for Prosperity.
He'll do the research and give it to you straight. Eric Erickson is live every weekday. Get the podcast, live stream, email, and social media links by texting Eric to 33777 now.
Greetings, conversationalists. I'm delighted to have you with me. I gotta let you guys hear the story. I find it impressive that So my kid has started college. This is her first week of classes. She had one class on Tuesday. She had two of them yesterday. And what I find very interesting about the whole setup is that she's in a class, and it's a great books class, where if you're unfamiliar with the great books program in colleges, you read the Western canon. So she's in one where I think they're reading like Genesis, Exodus, the Iliad, the Odyssey, the history of the Peloponnesian War, things like that. But the teacher was commenting that she's so tired of kids trying to pass off AI-generated, ChatGPT-generated essays as their own, they're now going to be doing their essays in class. They will have to write them in class, I think by hand, and so to ensure that they're not generated by ChatGPT, which I think is brilliant. So she's reconfigured her class, so there will be writing days in class where you're in class writing. So some of the class days will be conversation and participation, and some of the days will be short form essays, so that one, you're practicing your writing, and two, you're avoiding ChatGPT. I think it's kind of genius, actually. Good for the professor for retooling class to make that happen. Now, this hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan, wherever you are nationwide. If you're buying a building, you need a heavy equipment loan. You're buying a franchise. First Liberty Building and Loan makes their own decisions, and they'd love to partner with you. Reach out to them, FirstLibertyGA.com, FirstLibertyGA.com. I cannot emphasize enough, First Liberty Building and Loan helps businesses nationwide, not just in Georgia or the Southeast, but they've got clientele coast to coast. Reach out to them, FirstLibertyGA.com, businesses only. All right, when we come back, there's a wild story from, of all places, oh, and they've tried to soften the spin because they're so partisan, the ProPublica people. They try real hard to soften the spin, but it's hard to get around the fact that the Biden administration, remember the baby formula shortage? Yeah, I bet if you have small kids, you won't forget the baby formula shortage. It turns out the Biden administration refused to get rid of tariffs on baby formula to increase imports and drive down costs for families because it was the middle of campaign 2022 and they were worried about the dairy industry maybe not giving them money or maybe even helping the Republicans. That's right. The Biden administration put money into political accounts ahead of your children not starving. The cold, cruel political calculus that went into making the baby formula shortage worse than it already was because Biden was afraid of a Republican wave in 2022. Oh, you won't want to miss this. This is, and I can't believe it's ProPublica, of all the left-wing sites to break this news open. They've tried to spin it as best they can, but you can't spin this.